Hi, and welcome to episode number 26 of the weekly Google Cloud Platform podcast. I am Frances Campoy, and I'm here with my colleague, Mark Mandel. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Frances. How are you doing today?
Very good. Very happy and very excited about the interview to Gustavo
yes.
Ambrosio.
Gustavo Ambrosio from Pocket Gems is here today to talk to us about their game War Dragon and how their backend infrastructure works.
Yeah, I love the talk that you gave with him at GCP Next. I thought it was a very interesting talk because there was a lot of interesting technical aspects and also a bunch of dragons. So that's always good.
Whenever there's dragons, that's awesome.
Yep. And he's back to basically tell us a little bit more about all the details and all the things behind the scenes on what is the name? War of Dragons?
War Dragons.
War Dragons.
Yeah.
War of Dragons is that war's name. I like War Dragons.
War Dragons.
Yeah. And after that, we're going to be talking about Go.
Yeah, we have a nice follow-up question from one of our listeners, Hiran, who is one of our, I think, more prolific commenters on the podcast.
Yeah.
I challenge anyone to beat him for a number of comments.
We should send him a t-shirt. Like, we still have not done it yet.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast, too.
Yeah, he deserves a t-shirt. Maybe two.
Yeah.
But before that, we're going to be talking about the cool thing of the week, as often. And it's actually a very interesting cool thing of the week. And it's since .NET was open sourced some time ago, this effort has now been doable, which is you can now run .NET, .NET applications on Google Cloud Platform.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. I know some people will be like, but wait, couldn't I have just spun up a Windows instance before and done this myself regardless? But I think the cool thing is we've got now .NET client libraries for connecting to things like Cloud Data Store and other services that we have. So you want to not just run just regular old applications, but you want to interact with some of the managed services we have. I think that's a really, really cool offering.
Yeah. There's a blog post and we'll put a link to it on the show notes. But basically, the important thing that I think it's very exciting is the fact that if you like writing .NET applications and you already know how to do it, now you can still do it and be that and use some of the infrastructure that Google Cloud Platform offers. So one of them is Google Cloud Data Store. We talked about many times. So basically, this way of basically deploying, storing data that scales is completely managed, so you don't have to care about it. There's a bunch of examples. There's a Hello World tutorial. There's a Bookshelf tutorial. But basically, give it a try and let us know what you think about it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so I guess it's time to go and talk to Ambrosio. I keep on changing his name.
Guess that's his last name. So.
Yeah, so Mr. Ambrosio.
There we go.
Gustavo.
Yeah, let's go chat with Gustavo. Thanks so much to Gustavo Ambrosio for joining us today, lead software engineer at Pocket Gems and one of the genius brains behind War Dragons. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing better now that I'm a genius. I didn't know that, but yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Thanks for having me.
More than happy to give compliments like that. So thanks so much for coming to talk to us today about Pocket Gems, about War Dragons, about the game itself. But why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, all that sort of good stuff.
So yeah, I'm a software engineer. I've been a software engineer for I don't know how long. I started when I was 15, even before college. I started programming, and today I'm 42. So you do the math there. I don't think I've ever done anything else in my life. I love it, and mostly I've worked in Brazil on non-gaming related stuff, some boring corporate stuff, and then at some point I started coming here to San Francisco a lot, and I wanted to move here. I was like, this is my place. This is where, you know, software engineers have to come. It's the, you know, it's kind of like
the Mecca.
The Mecca, yeah. So I decided to come here. So I started looking for a job and I found Pocket Gems. They interviewed me, they hired me, they gave me a visa. So I moved and I've been working there for the last 3.5 years, making games and having fun and creating stuff. It's awesome. I love it.
Excellent. So I know that you've been behind a game called War Dragons.
Yeah.
Which has had some pretty decent success.
Yes, we did.
Wonderful. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the game, what it's about, what's the style of the game, all that sort of fun stuff?
Okay. So the game War Dragons is a highly polished 3D real-time strategy mobile game where you collect and control hundreds of dragons to take out enemy bases. In short, you get to control a lot of awesome-looking dragons and blow up a lot of stuff. It was Pocket Gem's first 3D game with real-time synchronous multiplayer battles and our first game to come out with social features from day one. Features like chat, guilds, forums, leaderboards, all of that. That's the first game that on day one we had that. It's development-wise, it was our longest game from start to release. We never had a game that had that size before. We never had a game that had the size of the team that we have right now. So it was a great learning experience for us at Pocket Gems. They have to create a new 3D engine. We had to create a lot of real-time communication stuff for mobile. It was a really exciting project to work on.
Cool. So I wanted to add also, since you just showed us, that on top of having so many cool features, you also have a very cool ad, and I thought it was amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
So we'll put that on the show notes. It is super cute and creepy at the same time.
Yeah, we're trying to reach an audience of, like, this is supposed to show in like, Comedy Central and ESPN. So imagine you're, like, a person like 30 years old and you're watching ESPN and that thing comes on. It's like, it's kind of weird. You have to watch it to understand what I'm saying, but it's probably going to get your attention a little bit.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, that's for sure.
It's definitely worth watching. It's hilarious.
Really made me laugh. Yeah.
We like it.
Cool. So you said it was an Android game, and I'm interested on the Android side of it too, but could you explain a little bit about, since it's an Android game, what is the part on the cloud, like why are you using the cloud and how?
So it's an Android and iOS. We started with iOS. We just released our Android version roughly a month ago. And the cloud basically allows us to, we need the cloud to do all the social features. Mm. We need the cloud because it's a game where everybody's bases matter and everything, like you can affect the game of other players. It's a very connected game. We need to have that connectivity. We need to have all the cloud to support those features. So it's very, very heavily based on the cloud. Like we have a lot of features that are based on the cloud. We like to release new events, for example, every week we have like special events, and all of our special events are heavily based on cloud technology. They're not built on the phone. We have something very generic on the phone. And then we can just push different events every week just using our cloud technology. Hmm. It also allows us to have like Android and iOS players at the same playing together at the same time. So it doesn't matter if you're playing Android, if you're playing iOS, you're gonna battle people with within other platforms as well.
Cool, and it also allows you to do a lot of stuff with analytics as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've been doing analytics on the cloud for like since the beginning of Pocket Gems. Like basically, this we always have a lot of heavy analytics on the cloud for all of our games, right? So we have already this built into all of our games. We have a common platform that every game sends all their events and all the data that we need to figure out what are users enjoying here, what are users not enjoying, right? We'd use it to do A-B testing to see if a new feature is something that the users are going to like or not. And then we decide to release features based on that data.
Cool. Are you also using analytics not only for features, but also to like analyze performance and stuff like that?
Yeah. So one of part of the analytics that we do is collect performance from devices. So we know we can split by device type and by platform, and we know what places of the game are slowing down the user or places that are using too much memory. So we can also use that data to drive our development, to make our game perform faster, have, you know, better FPS. We're always trying to have like very smooth animation, which is really hard with the range of devices that we work with. Like if you have a very high-end device, it's easy to do that. But when you go to the lower-end devices that we still want to support because still a lot of people are using those devices, it becomes really, really hard. And having all that data to help us focus on an area of the game that we need to improve performance and make the game smoother for everyone.
Great. So obviously you've got a back-end infrastructure. You're on our podcast, which probably means you're using Google Cloud Platform.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about like sort of what back-end infrastructure you're using, how you're using it, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we've been using Google App Engine heavily since the beginning of Pocket Gem. So like from the first game that when, you know, our founders were, the company was just two people, the two founders, they started using Google App Engine. And we haven't looked back. Like, Google App Engine has worked for us really, really well and has continued to work with every game that we build. So we use Google App Engine a lot. We use Data Store a lot. We use probably every feature that Google App Engine has to offer. We are using in very different ways, very, we think, innovative ways that we've used Google App Engine. There's a, I don't know if you want to mention the talk we did at GCP Next.
Definitely.
Yeah. So there's that talk. We talk about a lot about that. We go into some more like technical details. We have some interesting tricks that we use at Pocket Gems to be able to run our games in a smooth way in the cloud. So I think we're also going to put that on the show notes.
Cool. So something I'm curious about, and I always ask this question every single time I see people doing real time. How are you doing it on App Engine?
So the part about real time, we're using a company called PubNub. So okay. PubNub does a lot of real time stuff as well. So because we already had a partnership with them, we decided to use that for real time. So, and I don't know what they have in their back end,
okay,
to be honest. But we do some stuff which is near real time in Google App Engine. It has low latency, so you can do stuff like that. If you're using it in a clever way, like we do a lot of stuff that requires us to be real time, like all the battle reports and know whenever you're fighting someone, you need to distribute resources. That's all done using the Google App Engine.
Cool.
So you're essentially doing like all your user data and your game data and like your matchmaking, all that stuff's in App Engine?
Yeah, all that part is in App Engine. Matchmaking, whenever you need to battle someone, like to figure out who is a good user for you to battle, because like we have millions of users and some of them have super strong bases and some of them have super, you know, weak bases because they just started playing. So you need to figure that out. That is all done using Google App Engine. We have leaderboards, which is also very computationally heavy. We use that on Google App Engine, actually using some code that Google released as open source for leaderboards. So we found that when we were building our leaderboard tech and we said, yeah, let's use that. So we started using that and we modified that a little bit to suit our needs. But that's the base of our leaderboard. What else is very complicated there? Well, all the game user data, we do support people playing in multiple devices. That's also done through the cloud. So whenever you quit your game, we save all your data in the cloud. And if you load that game in another device, we load all that data from the cloud. So all that game state management is done on Google App Engine. All our A/B testing is done using Google App Engine. We can release new dragons, for example, without releasing a new version of the game. We can do something like that. And it's all done using Google App Engine. Even our asset management is done using Google App Engine and using the Google front end cache. It's really fast for us.
Cool. So I'm assuming that when you say Google App Engine for to store data, you're actually using the data store?
For the files, I'm not sure how we're doing that.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's Google Data Store. I think it is actually using Google Data Store.
Could be cloud storage, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Files, that part, okay. I don't know. That part is really, really... Like we built that in the beginning. I never had to touch that code. This has been working for us for like 6 years, I think.
It just works.
Yeah, it's just been working forever.
Well, that is good.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously you've had some success. How have you had to like change how your application has been built since been running on App Engine, running on Data Store? Have you needed to make many changes to it as the scale of how many loads and how many players and how many games and battles have grown?
No, we haven't. Like at least... Since I started working with Pocket Gems, this has been working like wonderfully. We never had to worry about our servers going down and all of that. Things just work. When we released War Dragons, we had like big spikes that it's shown in that presentation. You can see the big spikes that we had in like number of battles, I think is the graph that I had there. And we didn't have to touch anything. We didn't have to, you know, call Google and say, hey, we're going to have a big, big spike here. So you guys better be ready. No, it works. And, you know, it scales up and scales down as you need it. And things just work. We had a few adjustments that we did basically to control the costs that we have in Google App Engine. So there's some stuff that we were doing. And the way that we designed it, it was using... like too much data, or it was doing too many data store calls. So we redesigned a few of those things to do less calls and still have the same functionality to drive our costs down.
I believe you're using Memcache a lot to do that, right?
We use Memcache to do that. It's also in the presentation if people want some detail on how we do that. It's a very clever way to use Memcache and data store and task queues. So we use all that technology and we were able to drive our costs down a lot.
Great. I'm also really curious. I mean, you just released Android. You've had an iOS version out for a long time. Did you have to change the App Engine code at all for each individual like platform or your mobile platform, or was it the same, or what happened there?
Not at all. It doesn't change anything. We have, like, you can imagine we have a bunch of client code that we say, if it's Android, do this. If it's iOS, do this.
Yep.
But on our platform side, on the Google App Engine side, I don't believe we have any of that. All the communication is done completely the same.
Cool. Could you tell us a little bit about how you're doing it? Is it a REST API or?
It's mostly REST API. Like, it's really easy to build REST APIs on top of Google App Engine. So we mostly use RESTful APIs with a few exceptions there. For example, for just to get files, it's not REST. It's just plain old HTTP. There's not a lot of stuff going on there. But for all the data communication, it's all doing REST and with JSON as the format that we send back and forth. And it's really easy to use on the mobile side as well. Like, there's, you know, millions and thousands of libraries out there that's going to do that for you right out of the box without using anything like crazy.
So the question that I always ask too for people that write code on App Engine, are you writing it in Go?
Sorry?
Is it written in Go? What is the language that you use for
We use Python.
Python, cool.
Yeah, we use Python.
It's fine.
No, Python is awesome. I love Python. I haven't written anything in Go, so I'm not gonna badmouth it. So.
Excellent. So you do some really interesting things. We covered this in our presentation, but I'd like to go over it again because I think it was really clever how you use App Engine versions and match those up to client versions. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that works?
Sure. So, you know, Google App Engine versions, for people that don't know, it's basically you can deploy various versions of your code in Google App Engine. Then Google App Engine is going to give you a different URL for every version that you have. Traditionally, this is used for testing. So if I'm a developer and I'm developing a new feature, I don't want to keep deploying that to production. So we deploy that to a different version of Google App Engine, and then I can test that using that different URL, right, without disturbing production code. But at PocketGems, we devised a different use for that. So whenever we release a new version on mobile, what happens is sometimes we have to break compatibility with the previous version of Google App Engine. And traditionally, people have been doing that with if else, if version is this, do this, if version is that, do that. And then you end up with a lot of code that is old code and awful to read, right? So we don't like that. So what we do is we basically, whenever we're releasing a new version of Google App Engine, we don't care about breaking compatibility. And what we do is when we release a new version of the game, we first deploy the new version in a different URL, and we configure our client code to go to that URL instead. So then when people start downloading that new version, they go to the new version of Google App Engine, and the old version still go to the old version. So we don't break compatibility there. Like, it all works for everyone. And then at some point, what we do is we force users to upgrade. So a few days after we release something, we force users to upgrade. Mm-hmm. Then everybody upgrades, and we were able to take down the old version. And now the new version becomes what is called the default version. And everybody just connects to that version. So we're able to very easily break compatibility without actually breaking anything.
That is very cool. I guess that's the power of being able to force clients to be updated.
Yeah, we didn't have to do that. Like, we only do that because also we sometimes break compatibility between in battle. So when you're battling people online, with the new version might have a different spell that we created.
If
I'm fighting you and you have the old version and I do that spell's not going to work on your end.
Yeah.
So now things become out of sync. So we break compatibility basically not because of server code. Like, if you think about the server code, we could just keep, like, 10 versions running there.
Yeah.
Right? It wouldn't cost as much or anything else, I think, more. And it's not, it wouldn't be such a big deal. But there's this client part that does break compatibility when people are playing with each other online. That would break. So that's why we force people to upgrade, yeah, basically.
That is interesting. Otherwise, people could use the strategy of, I'm not going to upgrade, so no one can attack me.
Yeah, but then you can't attack anyone. And you lose a lot if you don't do that. And the social aspect of the game, I think, is one of the most important parts. We've been seeing that social aspect of it is what drives people back. Like, we have guilds too, so everybody's part of a guild, and your guild just plays together to fight other guilds, and your guild members can help you and you attack with their dragons. So that aspect is really important for everyone. So you can see people, whenever we release a new version, I get a message from my guild leader saying, hey, you should upgrade your game because otherwise we can't help you. And, you know, so upgrade right now so we can all still help each other. So it's really, that aspect is really nice. So upgrading is important for users, not just for us.
Great. We also covered this in the presentation, but again, I thought this was really interesting. You use like a data store in some really interesting ways to do matchmaking. You want to talk a little bit about how that process works? I know you also use task queues and some other fun stuff.
Yeah. So for matchmaking, it's kind of a complicated thing because what I said before, you have millions of users and every user is going to have a different level. So what we created, basically, we created a concept of bucketing users into matchmaking, like similar matchmaking levels. So whenever you do something that changes what your power would be, like, for example, you upgraded a building or you upgraded a dragon or you just applied some different what we call runes to a dragon, for example, your powers change there. You become more powerful. And whenever something like that happens, we put a task in the task queue to basically recalculate what bucket you should be in. And then at some point that task queue runs, we recalculate your power and we see in what bucket is better for you to be. And then we place you in that bucket. That bucket now, is something that whenever you want to battle someone, we just go to that bucket and we pick some player that's in that bucket. We know that they're going to have a very similar level to you. So the battle is going to be challenging. It's not going to be something that's going to be super easy for you to beat or it's going to be impossible for you to beat. We know that, you know, it's possible to beat. You're going to lose some, you're going to win some, but it's possible. But with millions of users, we couldn't find a better way to do that and still be perform well, right? Because whenever you battle, that's one of the most important things. We need to respond really fast. We want you to go into battle as fast as we can. So if we have to wait for, you know, the server to come back with something and it takes 5 seconds, it's gone. Like, your user is already out of the game by that point.
Great. So you're able to leverage task queues to be able to push that into the background so that the user doesn't have to wait for it. And we can keep that data, that complicated data processing happening in the background.
Yeah. And it's not that important to change your bucket right then, right? You can wait a few seconds. Your previous bucket, it's still competitive. It's still very similar to what you are, right? You're not going to be super easy. So if it takes 5-10 seconds to change your bucket, it's not a big deal. So we just push that to the task queue and the task queue does that calculation for us in the background.
Excellent.
Cool. So I think that we're actually running out of time. But as always, we'd like to give you the opportunity of telling us whatever you feel like we left out.
I just want to say that we're hiring engineers right now. We're hiring, especially we're looking for managers and leads. It's a hard position to fill. So take a look at our website. We're going to have that in the notes, I believe, as well.
Yep.
Take a look there. And if you're interested, just contact me. It's gustavo@pocketjams.com. If you're around for Google I.O., if you want to come and visit the office and you know, just shoot me an email, you can come. We're here in the city, pretty close to to where the conference is going to be.
I've been up to the offices. The offices are very nice.
Yeah, we have a very nice office. Thank you.
I have not been invited yet, so.
All right.
You're just saying.
officially invited now.
Cool.
Yeah, whenever you want to come. Yeah, so we have that position open. We're also going to be here for, I'm going to be at WWDC. If you're here for WWDC, just look me up as well. We can chat. We're happy to have you in the office and show you around.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today to come to the office and talk to us.
Thanks for having me. Your office is also really awesome.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, Gustavo, for such a great interview. I learned a lot, and I saw a lot of dragons on the video. You should definitely check it out again. That ad is very, very funny.
Yes.
But we are almost about to finish the episode, but we will not finish before the question of the week. And the question of the week, as we said, it's coming from Hiren Patel.
Yeah, he messaged us after listening to our episode and was quite interested in Go, but hadn't played with it. He comes from a Python background, was immediately curious about web frameworks in Go. It's a common question. I've heard it definitely a few times before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a very interesting question, because especially for people coming from Python and even more coming from Ruby, they tend to miss these frameworks, such as if you're coming from Ruby, you know, there's Ruby on Rails.
Yep.
If you're coming from Python, there, you know, there's Django.
Yep.
If you're writing Go, what's up? What's yep. up? Yeah. So there's actually my advice on this is frameworks. So the first thing to understand is actually the difference between what a framework and a toolkit is. And while in many languages you're going to be finding frameworks, such as Ruby on Rails is clearly a framework, frameworks will force you to adapt your code to whatever they feel the code should look like.
Mm.
So that is something that if that is what you're trying to follow, that's totally fine. And if your use case matches what they're providing, then it's great.
Yep.
Now, when you try to modify it, might be really hard. So instead, what the Go community tries to drive towards, it's toolkits. So you have a bunch of toolkits. You have things like, my favorite one is Gorilla.
Love Gorilla.
Yeah. It's a web framework. It's very, very simple. And basically, you can pick and choose whatever you need to use. So you have like, oh, I need to use a different way of routing requests to my web handlers. There's a way of doing that. I need to do sessions or whatever. Like, there's a bunch of different tiny packages that basically you can add to your code, and they integrate very well with the standard net HTTP package. So that is great. And if you want to know more about others, there's actually a bunch of them. We will put a link to a post from last year from the new stack that basically they cover 5 Go frameworks. And there's BGo, which is an actual framework. There's Martini, which is a very lightweight framework that uses a lot of reflection. There's like kind of like trying to be like Go on Rails, and it did not work that well. So the author of the framework, Jeremy Sands, hi Jeremy, he created a second version. It's called Negroni. It's much simpler. It's much more lightweight. So if you're thinking about using something that's out, Negroni is also a very good option. There's GoCraft, and then there's also Gorilla. So check it out. And also there's a very good talk from my friend, I lost the link.
Mark Bates.
From my friend Mark Bates. He used to be Rubist. And basically, he gave a talk at Gotham Go 2 years ago, and the talk was about, okay, so where is Go on Rails? And he basically answers that question. So the name of the talk is Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Go Web Apps, But We're Afraid to Ask. And of course, we'll have the link to that on the show notes too.
No, it sounds great. I think, I mean, we talked a little bit about it, but I think the standard library has defined such a nice set of like standard interfaces and ways to interact and manipulate it, that I feel like the Go community is more about composable libraries and like composable toolkits to build the eventual software that you need, than rather than building one huge monolith of opinionated framework.
So that is actually something that I really appreciate. And I'm thinking about maybe writing about it. It's about the power of very simple interfaces and how they allow you to extend the behavior of the existing code, right? So if you think about it, the HTTP package has this interface handler that has only one method, serve HTTP. Super simple.
Yep.
But that actually powers all the other toolkits we have.
Yeah, and it makes that super, super powerful. It's very Unix-y, right? You write the one tool for the one thing, and then you pipe it to another thing, and another thing, and another thing.
Yeah, interfaces like the pipes of Go. Yeah, why not? Why not? I could say the channels are the pipes of Go.
Yeah.
But yeah, both, whatever. But yeah, anyway, check the video, check the blog post, and let us know what you think about it.
Absolutely.
And before we leave, I think it's important to mention the fact that we, in our cool thing of the week, you might have heard, like yesterday, a lot of cool things going on at Google I/O.
Yep.
We will be covering them during next episode. Until then, just you can check the videos and everything is being not open source, live streamed.
If you check the hashtag #IO16, I'm sure there'll be plenty of content out there.
I think it's gonna be hard not to find out all the new things before next week. But in the meanwhile, I'm hoping you will find them around, and we'll cover them next week. And next week we'll be talking with John Feminella.
Yeah, we're going to have an interesting chat about unikernels, which is something up and coming. It keeps popping up in conversation, so we're going to have a good deep conversation about that.
Yeah, so if you're curious about unikernels, tune in next week.
Great. All right, well, we'll definitely be at I.O. Now, when this podcast is released. Where are you going to be after that?
So I'm going to be... So by next week, I will be in Chicago for GoTo. And after that, I'm going to try to relax. Well, actually, as I said, I'm going to be biking from San Francisco to LA. It's life cycle. But in the meanwhile, I'm going to be preparing my talk for July in GopherCon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And today I got a very exciting piece of news, which is I will be doing the opening keynote.
Ooh.
I am very excited. Kind of scary to be doing the opening keynote at GopherCon when one of the speakers... literally created the language. Rob Pike will be there too speaking. So
no pressure. Just no pressure.
No pressure.
No pressure at all.
But yeah, super excited about that opportunity.
Excellent. I think my big one's coming up June 3rd here at the Google SF office. We are having the Change the Cloud Summit. So if you're interested in building games and interacting with the cloud, either from a multiplayer or possibly analytics perspective, definitely sign up. We'd love to have you come and hang out with us for a day.
Cool. Well, thanks so much again for taking the time to record this episode with me today.
Thank you for taking the time to record it with me.
And talk to you next week.
See you next week.